This portion of the show is being brought to you by Honest Ed's Used Cars, where every car we sell is backed by an ironclad guarantee that is so complete and comprehensive that we really don't see any need to put it in writing. And remember Honest Ed's motto: if any used car dealer anywhere in the country says he can sell you the same car cheaper than we will, then he's even a bigger liar than I am.
Just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Ooh, good morning. Welcome to the Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host, keeping you company through this hour of observation and, sometimes ranting. Good to have you along. Thanks for being there. Looking forward to a great weekend around our place, and I hope you are as well. It is a, it looks like it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and it's more beautiful than it was yesterday with the rain and thunderstorms and the like. In fact, around our house, we've actually had the discussion about knocking the dust off of our little car. You know, if you've been listening for any amount of time, you know that we have a little, it's an old Mazda Miata. It's a 91. And we're talking about knocking the dust off of it, blowing the dust off of it, getting it started up and taking it out this weekend and enjoying this nice weather. It's going to be kind of nice. Near 90 today where we are. So hopefully that happens. And hopefully you have got a great weekend planned and that everything is going to be good for you. It's a good time to just turn your back on the weirdness of the week, to focus on your family and your friends, to do the things around the house you need to get done, and just shake off the insanity. Because if we don't do that, then doggone it, we'll go nuts. That's just all there is to it. If you don't shake off the insanity, it will own you, and you really, really don't want that to happen. Trust me, you don't want that to happen. Let's take this weekend, let's grill out, let's enjoy ourselves, and just let it all slide off. Because trust me, when Monday comes around, there will be enough lunacy to take care of itself. All right? Okay. Let's see, a little housekeeping before we move forward. If you're a subscriber, wow, I either need more coffee or less. If you're a subscriber to the Daily Perspective podcast, then I need to apologize to you because yesterday your download probably sounded horrible because there's a little issue that I run into from time to time, and it seems to be happening more frequently lately, and that is that it sounds at times like you've put it on double speed. And it's just choppy and messed up, and it just doesn't sound good at all. And when I discover that that's the case, what I do is I go get a clean version and re-upload to the podcast host, and then everything is okay. So if yesterday's podcast was choppy and you couldn't understand something that happened in certain places, then please go back and grab another copy of it, because there's a good clean copy of it online. Now, the previous copy is gone. I've replaced it. And can I go into tech nerd world for just a minute, just to cut, because I feel the compulsion. I need to explain this to Lucy. And, if I don't, I'll think about it the entire program. And that is that, the workhorse computer that I use for the vast majority of what happens during this program, the behind the scenes stuff, it's not the one that runs the program. All of the breaks and the music and everything is coming out of a dedicated computer, a little Mac Mini. It's a really old Mac Mini that I got really, really cheap, and it sits off to one side, and its job is just to play stuff back. It has a little schedule built into it, and it plays things back. And so at set times, we hit breaks and it starts playing music, and then it starts playing the little PSA spots. And then when those are over, it plays the bumper music going back into the next segment. It has one job to do, and it does it right. My workhorse, the big one, the 10-year-old iMac computer sitting in front of me right now, knock on plexiglass, it's 10 years old, as I said, and it is handling the duty of delivering the feed to Facebook Live. It's handling the duty of managing my word processor with all my notes in it, and it's handling the duty of, excuse me, of browsing the web, because from time to time, for two purposes, that's where I go right to the stories and read them instead of copying and pasting them. The word processor is there for other notes and other things, but the stories themselves, I pull right from the websites, just like you will if you get the show notes each day. So I pull them from exactly the same places where you will see them. And then there is the recorder, which is what records everything that happens. That's on the same computer, the same big iMac computer. And what happens when it goes nutso and sounds like it's all chopped up and sounds crappy is when one of the websites is reloading its images. I've figured this out. So if I've got a web tab open to a page and I'm reading a portion of a story for you and it starts reloading the images, the pictures and the like, the ads, you've seen that happen. You know how this happens all the time. It's especially irritating on a mobile device because you'll be sitting there reading something and all of a sudden everything jumps. It moves around and you can't stay up. And In that case, I just give it up and go and make a mental note to go read it on the computer at home. But when that happens on this computer, the web browser starts taking precedent over everything else. The computer bogs down and the recording gets choppy. And that's what's happened. And so when that happens, I try to arrange things so I don't have that issue by making sure all of my tabs are loaded and everything before we get going. But some websites, they're actively reloading their ads constantly. And when that happens, this old computer just says, "Wait a minute. I'm working on it. I'll be right there. Don't leave without me. I promise I'm trying to catch up." And it's just, and it just can't handle it. And that's what's going on. So that's the explanation of why you as a podcast subscriber get a crappy sounding episode from time to time. It's because my computer is, it's just old, you know. I promise I've had all the joints replaced. I just don't have the energy anymore. It just can't do it. And no, I'm not buying another computer. Have you priced these things? No, it's not going to happen. Before that happens, I'll reassign recording duties to another one. I've got a laptop laying over there that can record. It just hasn't gotten to the point where it's bad enough, because I can actually go to Facebook and download just the audio from the Facebook live feed, because that stays up online. It stays up on our page as forever after it's been done. So I can just go find that and download just the audio, fix everything and reload it back up again. And that's what I usually end up doing. So there we have it. And now I feel like I've even bored myself. Shall we move along? I think we should. Oh, sad news for people on the internet. Grumpy Cat, the feline whose permanent scowl turned her into an overnight internet sensation, has gone to that great kitty playground in the sky. She was 7 years of age. Her owners took to social media on Friday, today, to share the news that their loving pet had passed away Tuesday due to complications from a recent urinary tract infection. If you're a cat owner, you know that is a real problem. Cats tend to get urinary tract infections. Despite care from top professionals as well as from her loving family, Grumpy encountered complications from a recent urinary tract infection that unfortunately became too tough for her to overcome, according to the family's statements. Grumpy, who has 2.4 million followers on Instagram, inspired some of the most popular memes on social media after her permanent displeased expression was first shared on Reddit on September 22nd of 2012. Her owners said in that same statement, "Grumpy Cat has helped millions of people smile all around the world." Now, her real name was Tartar Sauce, T-A-R-D-A-R, not Tartar Sauce, but Tartar Sauce, has made televised appearances and even been pictured with Hollywood's elite. Her owners said on Grumpy's official website that they didn't know her actual breed, although they suspect she was some sort of mix. They said her famous frown was likely due to feline dwarfism. The family adds, "Her spirit will continue to live on through her fans everywhere." So, sad news for fans of Grumpy the Cat. She had feline dwarfism, did she? Why is it I want to ask if she got tossed around in bars anywhere? Moving forward to another cat who's not very popular, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. He's made it official. We talked about this a couple of times already, but this article, I had to share it with you. He's made it official. He's running for president. New Yorkers, somewhat less officially, mostly greeted the announcement with the city's beloved middle finger salute. Over at BuzzFeed, Catherine Miller was one of the first to notice the unenthusiastic reaction in a piece headlined, "Everybody is having a great time hating de Blasio," describing the protest scene in front of the mayor's Good Morning America appearance. Miller writes that the entire situation melded into one big liar chant, subsuming a variety of other chants about the inability to run the city and so forth, and uniting the people. Or as Twitter user Comfortably Smugs noted, "Really wondered just how many people will reply with, 'Fix the subway.'" Although, to be fair, New Yorkers usually don't wait for their progressive mayor to announce for president before righteously complaining about the condition of the subway. And it really does seem to be everybody. If nothing else, de Blasio has brought left, right, and center together in a great big meh to the idea of President de Blasio. Even reliably Democratic union guys joined in the fun on Twitter. A guy named Jake says, "Hey, good morning from Times Square." He's got a picture. De Blasio is due on GMA in a few minutes. Protesters outside, mostly cops, who brought foam fingers and whistles. They're all standing out there with foam fingers. They don't like this guy. And then another note, there he is, crowd outside chanting, "No friend to labor," really laying into those whistles. So they're doing everything they can to keep him from being heard. Oh, bless his heart. Politico, hardly a right-wing publication. Their first hit came out so quick you'd think they had it in for him from the start. In a piece written by Dana Rubenstein and Sally Goldberg, comes this. His tardy entry into the already crowded primary underscored one of the mayor's most enduring characteristics. But de Blasio's longstanding inability to keep to a schedule speaks to a deeper chink in his political armor. He's not just late to ribbon cuttings and memorial services. He's late to progressive causes, too. Oh, gosh. "He's a progressive who's very conservative," said George Arst, a longtime Democratic operative in New York who was press secretary to former Mayor Ed Koch. He goes on to say, "He likes to take leftist stances, but he's always late to the issues. He thinks about the issues too much before he can make a decision." So you got that? De Blasio is too far left for most Americans, but not revolutionary enough about it for many of his fellow Dems. There's just no pleasing some people. Even the New York Times got into the act. Their big announcement report was headlined, "Heckles Support Shrugs." But the story's accent wasn't exactly on support. And in case you think this was a one-off, last month, when the rumors about de Blasio's impending decision really got going, the New York Times ran this hit piece saying, "Nah, he should run the city." That's what John Mays, 78 years of age, a retired warehouse worker who was out near Mr. de Blasio's favorite YMCA shopping for a Mother's Day gift for his wife, said. "He's a good guy, though. He's good for mayor, and that's about it." 42-year-old Victoria Braxton, a teacher who was waiting for a bus not far from Mr. de Blasio's regular coffee shop, Colson Patisserie, "Mr. de Blasio should be focusing on things such as class size reduction and affordable housing," she said. She goes on to say, "It's a distraction from running the city." She said that about Mr. de Blasio's presidential aspirations before climbing onto the B-61 bus. She goes on to say, "It's going to be a tough election if he doesn't have the support in New York. What's going to happen in other states?" Keep in mind now, this is coming from Bill de Blasio's hard left hometown paper. If he can't make it there, he can't make it anywhere. So Bill de Blasio, the latest entry to the clown car, is so unloved in New York City that the people there are like, no, don't think so. The one guy said, "Yeah, he's good for running the city." That guy is probably not as in touch as the rest of those making comments. Because it seems that it seems that, doggone him, he's just not going to be able to win. But he's tossed his hat in. He wants to be the tough guy. And what is his entire, everything about what he's talking about? He may put out positions on different issues and such, but the bottom line for this guy is stop Trump. That's his bottom line. And that's his bottom line because he believes that everybody in the country is a leftist like him, that they're in the majority and they want to stop this guy who has reduced their taxes and employed more people and helped more people than any previous president in recent history. Go think about that. It won't take you long. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. I'm so glad it's Friday. I don't know about you, but I'm really glad this weekend is here. Yep. Still to come, we're going to be dealing with abortion again today, just as a heads up. I put it in the teaser on Facebook, I believe. But guys, we're dealing with abortion again today. It's going to be the lion's share of the show. There is one more thing to get to before we get to that, though. But that's in due time. First, thank you very much for listening. I appreciate the fact that you're there, and I appreciate the fact that you're sharing this little program with your friends. And I appreciate you wherever or whenever you may be listening. If it's on Facebook Live this morning, good to have you along, and thanks for being there. I appreciate you guys being there every day, those faithful who are there every day. Thanks a lot for being there. And for those of you who subscribe to the podcast, whether it be through iTunes or Google Podcasts, or whether you've dug it up and you found it direct from the provider and you are going every day and grabbing a copy of it, thank you. I appreciate that very, very much. It's it means a lot to me that you are subscribing to the show wherever you may be. And when I look at the list of subscribers, they're everywhere from California, Hawaii, coast to coast, some in other countries. Thanks for being there. I'm glad you're there, and I appreciate the fact you're there and the fact that you're sharing it with your friends as well. Thanks for being there, and let's keep up the good work. Let's keep spreading the word and get this family bigger every day, okay? All righty. Let's see. Where was I going? I'm driving, and I got lost. What does that say? Jim Acosta at CNN. God love the clown. He just keeps trying. He's so serious. He is CNN's White House correspondent. And he lied. Again. This time about remarks the president made during a speech yesterday about the overhaul to the nation's immigration system. We talked about this yesterday, about how his overhaul is merit-based rather than family-based. And, of course, your liberal friends are in a tizzy about this, and they're saying nasty things. And they're saying things like, oh, so family doesn't matter. Then what about Jared Kushner and Donald Trump Jr. and all of those family members, huh? So it's okay for that family relationship to matter, but not when it comes to immigration? Yeah, that's true. These people are already U.S. citizens. These people are not trying to break into our country just to get the benefits. They have proven themselves with abilities and talents. They have proven themselves with loyalty to the president in his business empire, and he trusts them. That's why. It's a completely different scenario. It has nothing to do with what you're trying to make it. It's a completely different situation. So what he's saying is he wants a merit-based system. He spelled it all out. It's all out there online for you to dig up. Go ahead and do it. I challenge you to do so today. What he wants to do is to use a merit-based point system, just like Canada does and other countries do, to make sure that the people coming into this country are going to be an asset rather than a liability. There's nothing wrong with that. It's done around the world. But the politicians and the leftists in the progressive press would rather you not know that. During the speech, Jim Acosta tweeted the following: Trump in the Rose Garden speech, paints asylum seekers with broad brush, accusing them of misleading immigration authorities at the border. Quote, these are frivolous claims, end quote. Acosta's claim is false. Trump made clear, a very clear distinction, between legitimate asylum seekers and illegitimate asylum seekers in his speech, saying this, quote, unfortunately, legitimate asylum seekers are being displaced by those lodging frivolous claims. These are frivolous claims to gain admission into our country. In fact, let's just put the whole transcript out there. This is what he said. We must also restore the integrity of our broken asylum systems. Our nation has a proud history of affording protection to those fleeing government persecutions. Unfortunately, legitimate asylum seekers are being displaced by those lodging frivolous claims. These are frivolous claims to gain admission into our country. Asylum abuse also strains our public school systems, our hospitals, and local shelters, using funds that we should and that have to go to elderly veterans, at-risk youth, Americans in poverty, and those in genuine need of protection. We're using the funds that should be going to them, and that shouldn't happen. And it's not going to happen in a very short period of time. I have to get this approved. My plan expedites relief for legitimate asylum seekers by screening out the meritless claims. If you have a proper claim, you will quickly be admitted. If you don't, you will promptly be returned home. The Center for Immigration Studies tweeted, quote, in fact, President Trump said that legitimate asylum seekers are disadvantaged by frivolous claims. The president is correct. Out of every 100 migrants who make credible fear claims, only 13 are ultimately granted asylum. 52 don't even file for asylum. Did you catch that? Out of 100 who make credible fear claims, only 13 of them are ultimately granted asylum. 13 out of 100. That's how many frivolous claims are being made. We have to change the system. It has to happen. Tim Murtaugh tweeted, quote, this is a lie, and Acosta is intentionally changing Donald Trump's meaning. What the president actually said was, unfortunately, legitimate asylum seekers are being replaced by those lodging frivolous claims. These are frivolous claims to gain admission to our country. The Trump campaign tweeted, you know, there's video proving you're lying, right? Trump said, our nation has a proud history of affording protection to those fleeing government persecutions. Unfortunately, the legitimate asylum seekers are being displaced by those lodging frivolous claims. My plan expedites relief. The Trump campaign added, how can you do this and go home at night thinking you've turned in an honest day's work as a journalist? The Free Beacon noted that Acosta also retweeted an apparent lie from NBC News reporter Julia Edwards Ainsley, who was fact-checking Trump during the speech. Quote, Trump, most claims by families cross the border are frivolous. That's what she tweeted. Fact, fewer than 1% of families crossing turn out not to be legitimate. And that, of course, as we've just seen from the report I just told you about, from the Center for Immigration Studies, is not true. Only 13% are actually granted asylum. Wow. Not 1% being illegitimate. And then the Free Beacon reported that tweet was also incorrect. At no point did Trump say that the majority of claims were frivolous. He actually didn't. Furthermore, in an interview last week, Acting ICE Director Matthew T. Albans said, quote, in just a couple of weeks, we've interviewed 256 family units and identified 65 fraudulent families. Almost 3 out of every 10 families we've interviewed have become fraudulent. And what he means by families being fraudulent is people who cross the border with a child that is not theirs. People who cross the border claiming to be related and they're not. We have learned recently that it has become business to rent children to people who are seeking asylum in the United States. In fact, I saw, I think it was yesterday or today, maybe this morning early, I saw a report that there's a guy on camera saying, yeah, there was a YouTube video that told me what I had to do and what to say when I came across. And so there is instruction online for how to fraudulently enter the United States of America claiming asylum. You can get a how-to video for how to get into this country fraudulently. Wow. So, when these people are saying, like Jim Acosta, they're misquoting the president, what is the reason? What's their purpose? In part, it's just because they hate him and they will deny everything he says. It's important for them to keep the toll rolling up. You've seen the toll. You've seen they're keeping count of the number of lies, right? 8,000 lies, 10,000 lies, 11,000 lies. You've seen that, right? I have. So I'm assuming you may have. If you haven't, then your leftist friends are keeping track and they're counting lies. They didn't do this for 8 years during the Obama administration when we have actually proven he was lying almost every time he opened his mouth. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. That's 36, by the way, right there. He made that statement 36 times to public gatherings. And it cost Americans millions upon millions of dollars. They didn't keep track of his lies. But they'll say anything they can and twist his words when it comes to Trump. They'll twist his words and make what he says into a lie. But when we actually do our due diligence and we look into what he actually really said, we find, no, he didn't actually lie. The people who are lying are people like Jim Acosta. So, once again, know who's telling you the truth and know who's lying. And most of the time, people lying are standing in front of a camera.
The sale has just begun. Hi, we're the Barnacle Brothers,
and the biggest sale in our history began when you heard the clock start ticking.
It's our 60-second sale.
And you've only got 50 seconds left.
Our doors were closed yesterday.
Our doors were closed this morning.
Our doors will be closed tomorrow.
But our doors are open right now.
But only for another 43 seconds.
We got color televisions for $6.
Got camcorders for $3 each.
You need an entire living room set, you'll find it at Barnacle Brothers.
For only 15 bucks.
How about a car?
We got this brand new Rolls-Royce stretch limousine for only 20 bucks.
But you gotta be here during the 60-second sale now in progress.
Here's a lovely mink coat.
59 cents.
And bars of pure plutonium.
Three for a dollar.
All during the 60-second sale, which began 40 seconds ago.
We didn't give you no warning.
We can't extend the time.
So if you want to save like never before, come to the 60-second sale at Barnacle Brothers.
We'd tell you how to get here, but that'd take up too much time.
Besides, if you're not here already, you ain't gonna make it.
Because the fantastic Barnacle Brothers 60-second sale,
with savings up to 99% off and more,
is now over.
Missed it again.
Damn.
Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. Good to have you along. Hopefully you're having a fantastic Friday. And first, a big thank you to those of you who have subscribed to The Daily Perspective newsletter. It's a daily dose of this show in your inbox. And what I mean by that is that you get all the notes. You get all the links to the stories that I talk about during the day, plus a little bit more. Because usually I don't have time to get to everything. And I'm looking at my list today, and I might actually make it through the whole list today. I might. We'll see. We'll see. There's a couple of stories on the tail end of things that it might be a bit of a challenge, but we'll see. And the thing is that if I don't get to something, if you're a subscriber to the newsletter, you get it anyway. Plus, you get any notes I might tack down below my links to remind me, hey, don't forget to look at this angle on things. So, it's a resource that you can use to educate yourself about what's happening in the world around you so that you can be intelligent and informed when you are discussing matters around the table with your friends. So there you go. Get signed up today. Go to my website. Go to markcongleton.com, markcongleton.com. Look on the right-hand side of the page. Fill out the form. And say yes when the confirmation email comes. Just respond to that affirmatively. And before long, you'll be getting the Daily Perspective newsletter. If you're listening to the live show today on Facebook Live, in about 25 minutes, the show will be over. But if you go do that between now and then, odds are you'll get today's show notes. So jump on it, all right? Now, I told you a while ago that a lot of today's show was going to be about abortion. And here is the first story in that particular segment. The Missouri Republican-controlled Senate passed a bill early yesterday that would ban abortions after the 8th week of pregnancy, except in medical emergencies. The vote came a day after Alabama's governor signed into law a ban on abortions at any time, absent a medical emergency. The bills, along with similar measures proposed in more than a dozen other states, are the latest efforts by conservatives to challenge Roe v. Wade, the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision from 1973 establishing a woman's right to terminate her pregnancy. Missouri State Republicans said in a statement, "This comprehensive, life-affirming legislation prohibits abortions once a heartbeat has been detected, prohibits abortions when a baby is capable of feeling pain, and would outlaw abortion in Missouri upon the reversal of Roe v. Wade." Senate Democrats, predictably, opposed the bill. The Missouri Stands for the Unborn bill will go back to the Republican-controlled House of Representatives for a final approval vote before it can head to the Missouri Governor Mike Parson, a Republican, to be signed into law. The bill passed the Senate 24-10. Parson has planned a news conference on Thursday afternoon. Well, that was yesterday afternoon, supporting what he called one of the strongest pro-life bills in the country. The bill would not allow an abortion even in the case of rape or incest. It would punish doctors with a prison sentence for carrying out a banned abortion, but would not punish women who seek the procedure. Supporters of such restrictions say fetuses should be offered rights similar to those of babies. Many supporters are Christians and say they believe God forbids most abortions. Most? The House version of the Missouri bill says that God is the author of life. Opponents of the legislation, including the American Civil Liberties Union and many Democratic lawmakers, say women should not be deprived of bodily autonomy and that bans lead to an increase in women seeking riskier illegal abortions. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Supreme Court, now with a majority of conservative justices after U.S. President Donald Trump appointed two, could possibly overturn Roe v. Wade. That decision held that the Due Process Clause of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment provides a fundamental right to privacy that protects a woman's right to abortion. Wow. Let's back up a little bit because there's a couple of things I want to highlight here. 1973, 46 years ago, that's when Roe v. Wade was passed down from the Supreme Court. 46 years. We've learned a lot in 46 years. That about babies being capable of feeling pain is one thing. Heartbeat detection, knowing exactly when, or pretty precisely when we can expect to hear a heartbeat. It's around 6 weeks. These things, among others, have come along in 46 years. Science has done deep study to know when the fetus starts developing. And science, real medical science, has proven that happens at the moment of conception. Development begins. We also know that what is developing is not a bowling ball. It is not a turtle. It's a human being. It's a person. These are the things we have learned in 46 years. Now, prior to 46 years ago, prior to 1973, it was just an accepted fact that when a young woman discovered she was pregnant, that meant she was going to have a baby. Nobody disagreed with that. What has happened in the ensuing 46 years is that the left has persuaded people to believe a fantasy that it's just a clump of cells. It's just a mass of tissue. That it's not a person. That lie is what so many have embraced. And that lie, this bodily autonomy, the right to do with your own body what you choose, that's how that's supported. It's unsupportable because in the past 46 years, what we have learned is that it's a person. We know it's a person. So that's the bottom of the issue. It's a person. In 46 years, we've left to deny the personhood of that which is developing. And they have found all kinds of bizarre ways to defend their denial of reality. Now, moving back to Alabama, Doug Jones, the Democrat senator, who was elected in that staged weird election when he was running against former Chief Justice Roy Moore, where I believe they were running a test to see if they could do the same thing to Donald Trump. They succeeded with Roy Moore. They tried the same thing with Donald Trump. It didn't work. Well, yesterday during a conference call with reporters, Senator Doug Jones, he's a Democrat from Mountain Brook, just outside of Birmingham, expressed his disappointment in the abortion law that was signed by Governor Kay Ivey. He blamed gerrymandering. Oh, God, gerrymandering, in part for the extreme nature of the bill, and argued its passage was going to cost taxpayers millions of dollars. Let me break for a moment here and explain something. He mentions gerrymandering solely because gerrymandering is a huge leftist push right now. Barack Obama's political activism arm is emailing people. I have them in my inbox right now. In fact, pardon me for just a moment. I'm going to get distracted for just a moment while I open my my email account. It'll probably make the recording go crazy. At any rate, in my inbox, I have mail from Obama's political action group about gerrymandering. Now, I forget it. I'm not going to do that. And they are focused on blaming political outcomes on gerrymandering. And gerrymandering is shaping political districts to the advantage of one party or another. The Democrats have done it for ages. It's done by both sides. But when the Democrats aren't winning, it becomes something evil. Just like the Electoral College, it becomes something evil. And that's why Jones blamed gerrymandering. He says, quote, I am and have expressed before, I am deeply disappointed with the extremely extreme bill the Alabama Senate House passed and was signed into law regarding the almost complete ban on abortions. I think this bill, frankly, is shameful. It is callous. I have said that. I stand by those remarks. We need to call this bill what it is and even call it what Pat Robertson said it is, extreme. By the way, thanks, Pat. You gave them fuel for their fire. Moving on, it is the most extreme abortion ban in the country, and it is, in my view, a product of what happens when you gerrymander political districts. So he turned this into a purely political issue. Moving on. So people don't have to be accountable, but to the extreme sides of an issue. This bill uses rape victims and victims of incest of all ages, even minors, as political pawns. Wait a minute, sir. Who's using them as political pawns? You and your cohorts are the ones who are trotting these rape victims and victims of incest out. Look at these poor, pitiful people. What about them? What about their feelings? What about how they feel? What about their lives? What about the person that was created as a result of those horrific acts? Are you advocating that we murder those people? Yes, that's exactly what you're advocating, sir. Exactly. There's a lot more to this story. Get the show notes. I'm not going to quote everything he says. He's not worth the time. Because he is just another one of the leftists who are lying to us. And we've known that for quite some time. He's a leftist. And he's telling the people of Alabama what the leftists want them to hear. That's what it amounts to. Doug Jones and people like him are politicizing this issue. The people who've brought the Alabama law into being are concerned about people, living people, and preserving their lives. People like Doug Jones, they're concerned with gerrymandering and political advantage and using victims of violence to their political advantage.
This helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew. Step, chew. Step, chew. Step, chew.
Wait a minute. I lost my pen. I was going to write that down. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, hoping you're having a terrific Friday. Moving forward, I've got a couple of things I want to get covered real quickly before we run out of time, and we're about to. Wednesday, an advisory board member of the 2020 Trump campaign named Jenna Ellis Rives shared a pro-life post from blogger Matt Walsh. Now, I share stuff from Matt Walsh on a regular basis. I shared something last night about how he has received death threats. Leftists have, because of what he has been posting online about abortion and other things, they have actually told him they wish and hope that his wife and daughters are raped. This is how vile the left can be. This is how horrible the mentality is from these people at times. Now, he's been undermining key pro-choice arguments. And Facebook flagged her post. She pointed a copy. She posted a copy of it. Facebook flagged the post as hate speech. She told PJ Media, quote, "Facebook continues to suppress conservatives, critiquing the progressive left and calling out their hypocrisy. We never see this kind of suppression when it's actual hatred from the left. For instance, attacks against Mike Pence for his Christian beliefs. Facebook's community standards simply mean they are in the business of censoring conservative thought. The post merely included a photo of a hilarious Matt Walsh tweet. Matt Walsh noted key pro-choice arguments about abortion being a woman's right, so only women can speak about the issue. He also referenced arguments used by transgender activists, celebrating biological men who identify as women being real women. Here's what he said. Gender is a social construct. But I'm a woman, hear me roar. But anyone can be a woman, but no uterus, no opinion. But trans women are women, but I demand women's rights. But men are women, but men are scum. But drag queens are beautiful, but appropriation is evil." He just nailed it. Indeed, transgender activism does undermine many central tenets of feminism, and radical feminists have condemned the idea that men can become women by identifying themselves as such. Lesbian feminist Julia Beck has spoken out against transgender activism as a Trojan horse that will remove key rights from women. Miriam Ben-Shalom, the first lesbian to be reinstated to the army after getting booted out for her sexuality, emphatically denied any connections between Trump's new military transgender policy and Don't Ask, Don't Tell. She found such comparisons offensive. Yet, the post pointing out the incongruity of transgender and feminist arguments was branded hate speech on Facebook. When Rives posted it, the social media platform warned, "Your post goes against our community standards on hate and speech." Now, this block is not making any sense. Perhaps the claim that men are scum could be seen as an attack on men, but far more likely, some transgender activist reported the post for hate speech, and a Facebook employee agreed. Walsh was clearly mocking these arguments, not endorsing them. Rives responded to the block by taking a screenshot and sharing that on Facebook with the message, "Really, Facebook?" And within 5 minutes or so, that post was also censored as violating community standards on hate speech. Both posts are currently under review and invisible to users. Yet this is not the first time that Rives, a constitutional lawyer and author, had a post taken down from Facebook before she joined the Trump campaign and got married, and just after the convictions of Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort. Jenna Ellis wrote an article explaining why the convictions of Manafort and Cohen did not put President Trump in legal jeopardy. Facebook took down her post, and a similar post from CNN contributor Selena Zito, branding their articles spam. The timing seemed rather significant, as many liberal outlets were sharing speculation that the Manafort and Cohen convictions could bring down the president. In the crucial hours after the story, two conservative opinions were silenced on Facebook. The timing of this block may also be significant. Abortion issues may have come front and center in the political debate after the Alabama Senate passed and Governor Kay Ivey signed a powerful pro-life bill challenging Roe v. Wade. Many Democratic candidates for the 2020 presidential election attacked the bill, and many of the same candidates celebrated transgender identity back in March. Matt Walsh's tweet is salient political speech, and Jenna Ellis Rives tried to give it a platform on Facebook, where she has more than 2,000 friends. When asked if she thinks the timing was suspect, she said, "Absolutely. This is what Facebook does. They censor conservative thought on key issues at key moments to keep us from commenting against the left's narrative. Then once the news cycle has had 24 to 48 hours, Facebook comes back with some lame apology and blames their algorithms. It's happened to me personally several times now at key moments for conservative politics with my posts or opinion pieces and other prominent conservative voices. It's also very suspect as a member of the advisory board. I didn't even editorialize. Just posted a screenshot of Matt's tweet with an emoji. How is that possibly against their community standards?" At least 17 other Facebook accounts shared the text of Matt Walsh's post. But Rives, a Trump campaign advisory board member, was not allowed to share an image of it. We have seen this happen so many times now, where some leftist, some progressive, a member of a victim group, reports something that hurts their feelings, Facebook or Twitter will agree, and the post, which is not really truly offensive in any sane measure of the words, is pulled. Accounts are put in jail. Sometimes accounts are suspended. James Woods, the actor who is a conservative commentator, formerly of Twitter, is no longer with Twitter for the very same reason. Because he posted a version of a quote about, "If you're going after the king, you better make sure you get him." And someone reported that as hate speech, as advocating violence, and Twitter shut him down. Shut him down. And that's merely because people on the left just don't like it when they are exposed. People like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, we talked about her yesterday. She's gone nuts about the Alabama law. And what she said is just crazy. Here's what she said. "Abortion bans," it's just Alabama and others, "abortion bans aren't just about controlling women's bodies. They're about controlling women's sexuality, owning women. From limiting birth control to banning comprehensive sex ed, U.S. religious fundamentalists are working hard to outlaw sex that falls outside their theology." Now, she has just lashed out at people of faith, and she is accusing people of faith of robbing women of their rights. Yeah, that is crazy. In another tweet from yesterday morning, from Thursday morning, she called banning abortion a brutal form of oppression. She said, "Ultimately, this is about women's power. When women are in control of their sexuality, it threatens a core element underpinning right-wing ideology. patriarchy. It's a brutal form of oppression to seize control of the one essential thing a person should command, their own body. Well, she's leaning on a progressive theme, patriarchy. Old white men telling everybody else what to do. She needs to look at her own party. It's run by old white men. And seizing control of the one essential thing a person should command, their own body. Well, Miss Ocasio-Cortez, this isn't about controlling your body. It's about protecting the well-being of the body which grows within you when you get pregnant. Because that's a person. It's not a clump of cells. It's not a mass of tissue. It's not a parakeet. It's not a puppy. It's a human being. A unique human being with DNA that's different than yours. It is a unique individual, a person, protected by the Constitution of the United States of America and endowed with the rights of that Constitution. And we're protecting you from murdering that person because that person is inconvenient to you. That's what this is about. And that's about the end of this program and the end of this week. It's been good being with you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday. God bless. Bye-bye.